So I'm going to talk about Apertana and avowals and language change, and how a lot of the documentation has been happening with Apertana is really more like taking a snapshot at particular points of a language change that seems to have been going on for quite a while now. So I'm going to talk a tiny little bit about language change, even though I'm sure that you all know what it is. I'm going to tell you a bit more about Apertana and Athabaskan, then I'm going to tell you about Apertana and avowals, about the inventory and how this inventory came to be. And then I'm going to tell you how Apertana and avowals actually are, because there are some differences there. And then we're going to talk about the consequences of this for language documentation. So the problem is simply this. Apertana has been documented for a very short period of time. Documentation began in 1959. And the vowel system is pretty much the only aspect that anyone has taken greater interest in, so there are four different accounts. The problem is these accounts don't match each other, and they do not match what I have heard produced in my last 5 years of fieldwork in two communities there. So one option is, of course, is a simply language decay, but the language was still vital when these changes began and when the first records were being made. So we'll talk about that a bit. Language change is the phenomenon whereby phonetic, morphological, semantic, syntactic, and other features of languages vary over time. I guess you knew that. And in linguistics, it's primarily studied by two sub-disciplines, historical linguistics and sociolinguistics. Now, we, of course, think about language change in language documentation simply when we try to establish language boundaries. So there's a tree of the Indo-European language family. And if the language is still vital, we may even think about different kinds of language, for example, youth language versus elder language. That is an example of language change. What we do is we end up looking at the results of language change, and we don't end up looking at the process. The result of this is, in the case of Apertana, it's really like this. You see the imprint of the photographer, that is kind of like the linguist that made the description. The linguist leaves a shadow there. And you see something about the setting in which it was done, and you see a somewhat skewed picture. The kid doesn't usually look like that, presumably. So we end up with a possibly inaccurate description. Or maybe we end up, this kid is going to grow with a description that is going to be outdated at some point. So the case study here is Apertana and avowals, and I chose this example for a bunch of different reasons. First of all, we have a very short time depth. We only have about 60 years. Then, as I said, the vowel system has been described by a number of different people, so this eliminates the observer bias to some degree. There are large discrepancies between each of the accounts, and there are large discrepancies between the accounts and between what people produce these days. The upshot of this is that ever since I started working in Apertana, the vowels have been worrying me. And I kind of feel it's time to lay this topic to rest. Apertana is an Athabaskan language. It is spoken in Eastern Interior Alaska in the Western Yukon Territory. There are about 90 speakers. This may be optimistic. Most of the speakers are over 50 years old and no children speak the language. However, all speakers of Apertana still speak English. In 1982, when the, not current, but the edition before of the Alaska Native Language Map was made, Tetlin is still listed on that language map as a community where children still learn the language. And I know some of these people that were learning the language in the 80s, they don't speak it anymore, but they do remember speaking it. So what this tells us is that in the 80s, the language was still fairly vital. Current documentation and similar efforts, well, there's very little work being done on the language, and there is not a great deal of revitalization effort. There are two linguists really that work on the language, that is John Ritter from the Yukon Native Language Center and myself. Teaching, A SAL linguist, Paul Malinowski, he started the documentation of the language in 1959, teaches occasionally literacy classes, and there might be a language and culture class this spring. The community interest in the language is very, very small. It's basically knowledge. No, I don't know. A lot of people simply do not seem to care about it a great deal. And the community interest in the work that I've been doing there since 2006 has been fairly small throughout, and is now, I notice, now it is rising and people actually take more of an interest in what I'm doing and start suggesting what I should be doing, which is great. So to show you where it is, it is that little strawberry-shaped thing. So you can see it is on both. You can probably not see that it's spoken on both sides of the border. Here you see a slightly more detailed map of the area. There are four communities that I'll be talking about quite a bit today. There is Tetlin. You see that large lake in dark blue right in the middle. Tetlin is close to that. Then if you follow the black line east a little bit you get to Northway, and then we have here and here. Those are the four main dialects. There's a fifth, which is off the scope of this map because it's in Canada. So we identify five dialects, Tetlin, eight speakers that I personally know. Somebody who should know says there are probably around 20 in total, but I haven't seen them. Nabesna, I know personally two speakers. There's possibly one more. Northway, I know 20 speakers. There are probably more. This is the most vital of the dialects. Scotty Creek, no known speakers. And Beaver Creek, one speaker that I know, and quite possibly others. So Upper Tanana phonology. It has participated in the Great Northern Series Shift, which is a phonological change where about half of the consonant system simply moved one articulatory place forward. And most of the neighbors of Upper Tanana have participated in this shift. Upper Tanana is a tone language. It has low tone, with the exception of the Tetlin dialect, which has no tone. This is probably due to influence from its neighboring communities. Tanacross, which is right next to Tetlin, has high tone. Atna, also a neighboring language with extensive contact with Tetlin, has no tone. Upper Tanana is defined, however, through the development of its vowel system. So Proto-Athabascan vowel system has seven phonemic vowels shown here. The Upper Tanana vowel inventory is somewhat larger. You can see why I get worried. It has, if you count it all up with nasalization and vowel length, you end up with 26 phonemic vowels, and now you have to add in tone, so too many vowels. And this one vowel depicted by the ram's horn here is not present in all of the dialects. It doesn't exist in Tetlin and Nabesna. This large number of vowels is caused by developments of the stem syllables, so stem consonants have influenced the vowels and the vowels have simply changed. Three of these changes are unique to Upper Tanana. The first one is Proto-Athabascan E, going to the diphthong variably reported as ia or ea. A, going to a vowel that is reported as e or u, I presume, and u going to a diphthong again, u. And S here represents a coronal fricative or affricate. There are some problems with these accounts. The first of these is the diphthong ea or ea. And in contemporary speech, there is variation between ea and air. And the lack of older recordings makes it very difficult to ascertain whether the pronunciation ea ever did exist. There is one older recording from the Tetlin dialect, and there it sounds like.
Yeah.
Can you hear that okay? All right. And you see, you don't see on the picture that there is clear formant movement, so this very much is a diphthong. Second problem with this account, and this draws very heavily on work that I've done with my colleague Sari Tuttle in Alaska, is the so-called sixth vowel, which was reported as a high central vowel by Lear and as a high back vowel by Minora, unrounded in both cases. The problem is that everyone that wrote something about the vowels has a different opinion how it is pronounced. So Milanowski in the first study says it's a lax closed back rounded vowel. And then we have accounts by Krauss, by Lear, by Minora, and they all say something high vowel, a close vowel, maybe central, maybe back, probably unrounded. It's hard to tell. And Sari Tuttle and I and Isabel Nunez-Ortiz did an acoustic phonetic study and established that for most current speakers of the Northrian Tetlan dialect, the vowel, in fact, is a closed mid-central unrounded vowel. Now, how come that we have all of these different accounts? One option is to assume that everybody else was simply wrong and not listening properly. This is a bit of an arrogant stance, however, and I didn't like it much. But neither high nor rounded articulations are attested in the one older recording that I earlier listed in 1982. And he pronounces the vowel just as current speakers would pronounce it. In Northway, however, we find some variation because in Northway, several speakers have a backed version of this vowel. And those speakers that have backed vowels there are reported to be very good Northway speakers, very conservative speakers. Those are the ones that I should be talking to. So quite possibly these are the speakers that have preserved a slightly older form of this pronunciation. It is unclear at the moment whether this variation is due to language change. I simply need to find older recordings and try and find usable data in them. So for now, I cannot answer this question. The final vowel is the diphthong U, which is reported in various sources. It is reported in Krauss, in Lear, it is reported in Carey's stem file, dictionary file, and in Minora. They all report this diphthong and its nasal counterpart. The surprising thing, however, is that I can say with very great certainty that this diphthong doesn't exist anymore. It has developed in two different ways, in Tetlan and Northway only. It has, in verb stems, become a long oo. In noun stems, it has become a long nasalized oo. So I'll give you some examples. These are two forms that are predicted and have been recorded by Carey as having this diphthong. And these are two forms that I recorded in Tetlan a few years ago. That's what they sound like. There is no diphthong here. Again, no diphthong. And this development, this loss of the diphthong and this monophthongization to oo in verbs and ong in nouns is fairly consistent for those two dialects. Then I was thinking, well, maybe sometimes I do hear a slight u. For example, in the word ichlu, I'm dragging. And if I look at the spectrogram, you do see a little bit of form and movement here. But again, I can't really hear any diphthong bit. I hope it finishes loading. So what I do here is now I compare it to another word that begins with ch and then u. However, this one has a final k, which means that it didn't participate in this particular development, which means it never had this U diphthong. And you see you have the same or almost very similar form and movement here. The reason for this lies simply in the barred L, which in Upper Tanana is pronounced very frequently with a raised tongue back, resulting in a palatalized pronunciation, which of course then impacts the U. Now, if we look at Carrie's Stemfell, which is pretty much the only record that spans a bit of time and several dialects, most people have worked in a very isolated fashion, we can see that he actually documents the beginning of this change. So noun stems with a predicted eu, that is noun stems that in Proto-Athabascan contained an oo followed by a coronal fricative or affricate, are nasalized already in all dialects. So the spontaneous nasalization we observe in noun stems must come before the monophthongization. Here the tilde indicates a nasal vowel, the Stemfell is in text format. So we have the word for dwarf birch, which he lists as chion, LH is for bardel. And then he lists that in Tetlin you already had the form chlon at the time, but that in Northway, in Skadi Creek, and U stands for Nabesna intuitively, upper Tanana, really. In all these three dialects, we have the form Hio or Hio. So, monophthongization at this point has occurred in one of the dialects, but not in the others. The same word recorded a year ago, actually in Northway, is now also contains a monophthong as well. It is now Hio and not Hio anymore. So if we list all available forms for three noun stems, and why did I say three when I list four, I'm not too sure, we can see the progress of the sound change. So we have the word for robin, and it is son in all dialects. We have the word for fireweed, and it is gron in Tetlin and Northway, and supposedly it is grion in Nabesna and Skadi Creek. The word for camp robber, there a change has been taking place. In Tetlin and in contemporary Northway dialect, it is John, but in 1990, Carey already observes variation that both the forms Gion and John were attested. And Mountain Willow, we just had that example. I'm sorry, this doesn't come out very well. We just had this example. Carey reports it in the 1990s for Northway as Chion, but it is now pronounced as Chion. For the Tetlin dialects, even the oldest records do not show pronunciations with io. I went and checked a bunch of noun stems in the Milanowski dictionary, which is from, I don't know, 72 or something like that, and he lists all of these words with un and not, no variation. Now moving on to verb stems, the problem is, because of the complex morphology, it is actually very, or because of other stem variations, it isn't always easy to get, you need to have the verb stems, verb forms in the exact right aspect to get the conditioning environment. So it was fairly difficult to find a set where we have enough data points to work with. The one I found is dragging, chlio or chlu, which is reported by Krauss in a letter to Paul Milanowski as chlio for the Tetlin dialect. We don't have data for any of the other languages from that time period. In Carey's 1990 stem list, he lists chlu as the Tetlin form and chlio for all the other dialects. And in 2010, when I checked this, the form has changed in Northway as well. It has gone to chlu in Northway and in Tetlin. I do not know what the form for the Nabesna dialect is. I simply didn't think of asking anyone. But I did work with a speaker from Beaver Creek, and she actually still has the diphthong. So what we see is that the change seems to be spreading from Tetlin to Northway. I am not sure about Nabesna. And Beaver Creek and Skadi Creek don't seem to be quite as affected yet. So what we've seen is that the vowel inventory of Upper Tanana is changing. The unusual monophthong that vowel really troubles me, may have undergone change to or from a. It's hard to tell. The diphthong ea seems to be more appropriately represented as ea, and it may be on the route to monophthongization. It's hard to tell. The diphthong io has monophthongized in two of the Upper Tanana dialects. In verbs, it has become u. In nouns, it has become o. So what has happened is, over the last 60 years, several snapshots of Upper Tana have been taken by various linguists. Every language went in, documented for a little while, went back, and wrote up some results. So we have some pictures of what it looked like. But some of these snapshots were skewed in a number of ways. However, the mismatch between those various snapshots and the language as it is currently spoken is probably due to language change more than it is due to not so good descriptions. And because we have a number of still images of this language, we kind of have an idea of what the change could actually have looked like. And the differences between the various accounts may also simply be due to extreme variation. If you have a speaker pronounce a vowel, even the same speaker pronounce a vowel several different ways, and I do find that with the current ones, then it is very difficult to figure out how the vowel actually should be pronounced. So we don't have just variation between dialects and between speakers, we even have variation within speakers. So today I declare that the vowel system of Upper Tanana is this. I will have changed my mind again by tomorrow. I've been changing my mind very much about this. So I say that we have two high vowels, three mid-high vowels, one low vowel, one unrounded back vowel, that is a fact schwa actually, and one diphthong, yeah. As I say, I'll change my mind again. What all of this means for documentation is we need to consider time depth. We know that it is necessary to go back to older descriptions, and we try and do so as much as we can, but even if we manage to give an accurate description of something, if we happen to do so at a time like the people working in Upper Tanana vowels have been doing, you end up with something that is going to be outdated only 10 years later. And we also know that languages that are under extreme pressure, and Upper Tanana is a language that is under extreme pressure, are likely to change much quicker than, at a different rate than other languages that can also simply fossilize. So language change is always happening. Sometimes it can happen in a way that is actually challenging to our documentation efforts. Just imagine what would have happened if the only description of English we had been undertaken at the time of the Great Vowel Shift. It would be a nightmare. The consequences for revitalization, well, the fact that a diphthong has essentially disappeared means that certain language materials are outdated now. Again, you can probably just, you can retype stuff and fix it. That's not the problem. But the more interesting problem to my mind is what should be revitalized? Which phoneme inventory is the right one? Which is the one that is worth revitalizing? In Alaskan Athabaskan groups, there's always great respect for the high language and the old language. This is the proper way of speaking. And the younger people and the elders that I work with consider themselves as the younger speakers. They always say, well, we don't speak as well as the old people did. So what should we revitalize? The old language, which may have had the diphthong, which may have had, a different vowel in one place, or should we revitalize the language as it actually is being spoken at the moment? Now, fortunately, this is not my place to answer the question, because I'm not the one doing the revitalization. But it is to me worrying a bit that there's somebody from a neighboring community here. I was hoping I could get away with simply never telling anyone about this. And that way, if people were to revitalize, they would simply take what they have and not as it may have been. Anyhow, thank you for coming and listening, and thanks in particular to all of these speakers who contributed to this by producing long, boring word lists. Thank you.
We have about 5 minutes left for questions, so a couple of things going on, and in the